Hey everybody, in today's episode I'm going to be going over my newest article on the Substack newsletter slash blog that I founded a couple months ago. This article is called The Migrations of the Aria and the Quest for a New Atlantis, and it's subtitled After the Fall of Atlantis, a New Global Power Arises in North Asia. And so this article is part of this ongoing series that we've been doing that's tracking the history, purpose, and destiny of philosophy. And we've started things in Atlantis, and we moved forward through the mystery schools down into the origins of the first schools of philosophy that emerged during the Axial Age. And in this article, we're going to be tracking a story that is very important, an important part of this transition of the wisdom teachings out of Atlantis and into the mystery school system of antiquity. There was an important step in this process, and that step involves the emergence within Atlantis before its fall of a sect of reformists, you could say. And these reformist groups were attached to the higher orders of the Atlantean priesthood that did not fall into corruption. So these reformists were obviously unsuccessful in their effort to convert Atlantean society away from the evils that it was falling into. And this group, or this sect, this reformist sect, migrated out of the Atlantean capital, which is obviously in the Atlantic Ocean, and then migrated halfway across the world to the North Asia Himalayan mountain region. And it was here that the next round of evolution would really be, the stage would be set for that to take place, for the post-Atlantean era to emerge. And so after the decline of Atlantis, in the series that we've been looking at, we talked about how the early states that arose after the deluge imitated the Atlantean model. But gradually, as we go through time, the Atlantean model began to change within these societies. It began to evolve away from it. And by the Atlantean model, I mean a certain paradigm of institutions, with religion and the state being the centerpiece of the social governance model. Gradually, as we go forward through history, we see things moving gradually from a monarchy to an oligarchy. And there's a lot of associated changes in society that happen alongside that transition. But Atlantis was firmly a monarchy. It was firmly, it was the archetype of this situation in which you have a religious autocracy, essentially, and a monarchy and a priesthood and absolute control over society. But so gradually in the early states, we see this model recapitulated, and then gradually it begins to evolve. And so now in this article, we're going to be tracking the origins of that reform movement. It didn't just happen accidentally. These reforms were part of a plan, and they are part of a large grand strategy. And the group behind this grand strategy of institutional transformation that we see playing out through history down to the modern age, but of course across the whole course of pagan empire moving into the Christian age, that whole sequence of evolutionary stages that mankind has gone through, you know, just did not happen accidentally. So there's been a group or a secret fraternity or society associated with the unfoldment of that program. And this is the cycle of the Aria. And so we're going to be talking about that today and what their ultimate agenda is, which is in the title, The Quest for a New Atlantis. So our new reformed or a new further evolved Atlantean Golden Age to resurrect that. But again, evolve it forward. So anyway, that's what we're going to be talking about today, and remember, all these articles are going to be eventually synthesized together into a book, so I'm writing them all with this idea that there's a larger sequence of articles and topics that I'm going to be covering. So this article and the previous articles in this series, dating back even to the first article in my Substack, which was the one about the Ukraine war and the Great Reset, that all of this forms a continuum of reasoning that I'm going to be tracking further now into the future. So after this article, now we're, instead of going back in time and looking at the origins of philosophy, we're going to be moving more into considering what the future of philosophy is and what its destiny is and consider the role that it's intended to play in man, in society and in human development. And obviously it's falling short of that standard today. So that's part of my goal and my motivation behind this project is to attempt to resurrect philosophy and also give it a new vehicle to have expression, a vehicle for it to express itself through in society in the form of design. So that's where I'm taking things towards a philosophy of design. But now we're starting with the Atlantis, now the cycle of the Aria. And then we're going to be picking things up and going towards the future after this article, starting again with Plato. In the next article, we're going to be moving back towards the Axial Age, and we're going to be considering Plato's vision for a worldwide philosophical commonwealth, or a philosophic empire, you could say. And that article is really going to reveal, you know, what the purpose and plan of philosophy ultimately is, according to the Plato and the and Pythagoras and the founders of philosophy. So we're going to be considering that in the next article. So this article is going to be building up to that. So the migrations of the Aria, so we're going to be looking at the origins of this process of institutional reform that has been taking place and will continue to take place in the future until we have this philosophical empire of Plato. So I have before getting into the first section of this article, I have a little introduction. I'm just going to read that real quick. This article is part of an ongoing series exploring the history, purpose, and destiny of philosophy. In previous articles, we tracked how philosophy was originally born out of the mystery schools of antiquity. We also traced how these mystery schools originated during the lost antediluvian age of Atlantis. In this article, we're going to look at an important event that took place toward the end of the Atlantean era before its collapse, the emergence of a Reformation movement within its capital city. This movement began with an uncorrupted sect of the priesthood who had warned the people against the evils that Atlantean society was falling into. As a result of their heterodox message, they were exiled and cast out of the Atlantean capital. Leaving their Atlantean homeland continent, the sect of reformers, termed the Arya or Noble Ones, migrated halfway around the world to the Himalayan mountains of North Asia, where they established a community which would, in time, chart a new course for the future advancement of civilization. In this article, we're going to be delving into the backstory of this exiled sect while also discussing the role that they would play in incrementally evolving civilization forward in the post-Diluvian era. So that was the introduction. All right, now let's go into section one. It's called The Aria, An Introduction and Overview. In Atlantis, a closely guarded body of sacred knowledge was monopolized by a small priestly elite who used it to rule over a comparatively primitive population like gods among men. Atlantean society was ruled according to a paternalistic philosophy of state, where its kings and priestly councils governed their empire by divine right, directing the fate of their people as shepherds to their flock. When the ruling elite stayed true to the laws of heaven and used this knowledge to rule their earthly kingdom wisely and benevolently, Atlantis experienced a golden age and society as a whole prospered. Even during its golden age, however, there was always a considerable difference between the level of advancement attained by the sacerdotal elite and that of the common person. The Atlantean golden age was established from on high. It was not a bottom-up emergence, but a top-down creation. It was the creation of a small sect of priest magicians who first emerged out of an older tradition of shamans and medicine men. This small society of advanced sages were far in advance in terms of evolutionary attainments than the average individual of society. Thus, Atlantean civilization was dependent for its own greatness on the achievements of a small elite. Atlantis' problems arose when this priestly elite began to jealously hoard their knowledge and misuse it in order to further their control over the material boundaries of the Atlantean Empire. Given that the Atlantean priesthood held a complete monopoly over access to the sacred and secret body of teachings that unlocked the keys for wielding power over the Atlantean Empire, meaning the secret knowledge of how to control Atlantean society, all domains of the population were hopelessly dependent upon this one group in order to gain access to and benefit from the use of this knowledge. So I hope you can considering the Great Reset and technocracy and all this, you know, transhumanist talk and some of these trends that we see in the modern zeitgeist, I hope you appreciate why I'm emphasizing and going back towards Atlantean times and emphasizing this idea of an Atlantean archetype being impressed upon the psyche, the collective psyche of mankind, as a type of a collective karma that we enact over and over again, but gradually progress ourselves out of. That's kind of what the vision I'm laying out here. This is how it works, essentially, in my understanding. You know, the soul evolves through undergoing these experiences, and these experiences represent a type of ignorance or a type of acceptance of false beliefs on behalf of the soul that leads to its involvement in this cycle of karma. And so in philosophy, the solution to the situation is wisdom, or the pursuit of wisdom, or the love of wisdom. And that process of loving wisdom will orient the individual towards the attainment of wisdom. And here, wisdom represents the overcoming of ignorance or illusion, and is actually associated with an experience of consciousness in which this attainment of wisdom is experienced as a mystical, transcendent experience of unified consciousness. So anyway, the Atlantean priesthood possess knowledge over these inner metaphysical realms of the mind and the psyche and consciousness, and use this knowledge to control, have full spectrum control over society. So there's a type of archetype of a secular scientific re-manifestation of this archetype in modern society. That's one of the themes I'm trying to point out here, is that some of the things that we see today are similar in theme to what we talk about when we talk about the fall of Atlantis and its fall into black magic. We see similar themes today. And the idea is that we're recapitulating an archetype, but we are intended to evolve out of this. We're intended to confront these shadow complexes within ourselves that represent this Atlantean archetype. It's a type of shadow complex, or a series, a sort of pattern of shadow complexes that come together to form this Atlantean archetype. And so we're intended to confront this and overcome it, because we're not in the Atlantean age anymore. We are now in what we're calling in this article, or what in esoteric philosophy is called the Aryan age, or the age of the Arya, which is this age of reform and confronting this karmic pattern. So that's the background of what I'm going with this. So picking things back up. When the priesthood fell into corruption, it would end up bringing the entire empire down with it. Yet some vassal states and colonized regions would survive, as would a sect of exiled migrants, the Aryans, as we're calling them, who had settled in the Himalayas. This sect of exiled migrants had originated as a heterodox reform movement within the Atlantean priesthood, as we mentioned before. They were against the corruptions that the orthodoxy had fallen into, and attempted to warn the Atlantean population away from the self-destructive path they had fallen into. After leaving the Atlantean capital and migrating halfway around the world to the Himalayas, the spiritual leaders of this sect established a small community and worked to redesign civilization away from the archetypes of the previous Atlantean pattern. As a replacement for the Atlantean pattern, they sought to chart mankind on a new course of development, one that would address and gradually fix the various shortcomings of the Atlantean design that had led mankind to fall into a state of endemic corruption. And as I'm going to be arguing, one of the design features of Atlantis was this extreme polarity between the elite and the common person. So in our age, we are intended to have the collective body of mankind elevated. So Atlantis was more of an age in which the gods walked among men, and it was a paternalistic age, you know, of shepherds and flocks, so to speak. As part of their reformation plans for a post-Atlantean order of civilization, the great spiritual leaders behind the Aryan migration to the Himalayas sought to break the monopoly that the priesthood jealously protected over the body of wisdom teachings contained within their mystery schools. In order to break this monopoly, the Aryans worked to develop a new redesign for civilization, one where the wisdom teachings would move outside the temple walls and instead become gradually seeded into the collective body of mankind. It was the plan of the Aryans to gradually democratize access to mankind's collective heritage of sacred knowledge so that it may be used to benefit and elevate more and more of the collective body of mankind. The Aryan plan was to ultimately one day establish a new Atlantis, founded on democratic principles, where access to sacred knowledge was available to all in potential, but it still had to be earned by the students successfully undergoing the initiations and rites required for advancement. Here, Earth itself was to become one great mystery school, in which all human souls are enrolled, instructed, tested, and gradually elevated into more highly evolved states of spiritual existence. So the project of turning the world into a philosophic commonwealth founded on philosophic principles is the project of the Arya. Now, as we're going to see in future articles, this is associated with Francis Bacon because he wrote a book that was called The New Atlantis. So I'm taking this concept of New Atlantis from him, but he in turn takes it from Plato and or sort of reinterprets Plato, and that's how he comes up with the New Atlantis concept, because Plato is actually the source, not the only source that we have for teachers on Plato, because they're littered throughout the mythology of the ancient world, but he's one of the main vehicles by which we have to analyze the the symbolism and allegories associated with the Atlantis myth and try to piece out what actually happened, given the scarcity of actually firm historical knowledge about this prior civilization. You know, we have these monolithic architecture that remains, and then we have mythology. So let's return to the article. Having first developed within their small and reclusive Himalayan community their vision and strategy for how to attain this new Atlantis, the sacerdotal elite of the original Aryan sect sent waves of Aryan ambassadors and teachers around the world to gradually install their grand design upon the institutions of remnant Atlantis communities. So the Aryans worked to establish this philosophic empire not by dominating the world, or not by sending military forces around the world, but by sending sort of teachers. And these teachers in successive waves over time migrate into communities and across the world, these remnant communities of Atlantis, and they gradually reform the institutions of these societies away from the Atlantean model and gradually towards something new, towards their architecture of institutions that becomes synonymous with the pursuit of the philosophic empire. So one of these underlying trends that we've had throughout history is this modification of the Atlantean institutional design and the evolution of that system into something that's Aryan. And the part of the point of this new developmental program that is being put into place by this Aryan project is to gradually elevate the collective body of mankind and to reduce this polarity between the elite and the rest of mankind, because the vision, ultimate vision of the philosophic empire is that all souls become initiated, all souls become awakened. So this is part of the progression of this larger plan for humanity. Having first developed within their small and reclusive Himalayan community their vision and strategy for how to attain this new Atlantis, the sacerdotal elite of the original Aryan sect sent waves of Aryan ambassadors and teachers around the world to gradually install their grand design upon the institutions of remnant Atlantis communities. The Aryan reformation of Atlantean institutions would not happen all at once, however. Rather, it came in waves, with Atlantean successor civilizations in Egypt, Mesopotamia, Asia, the Americas, and the Mediterranean initially building their state empires according to the blueprint of Atlantis' original program of institutional design, meaning they imitated the Atlantean model of civilization, the core social structures. In other words, the early states of the post-Diluvian era replicated the same set of core social structures that Atlantis had, but in time, this Atlantean institutional template would gradually be evolved away from, incrementally. Through the incremental change management effort initiated by the Aryans, mankind began evolving itself away from the Atlantean model of religious autocracy and instead gradually began adopting a sequence of new civilization designs that were distinctly Aryan. By civilization design, I mean institutional design. The core social structures are being evolved. And that changes what society looks like, or what that's also changes what the experience of being a member of that society works like. Like, it changes political relationships within society. It changes the economic model of society. All these things begin to change away from an old pattern. And this is all happening according to an agenda. Gradually, this grand Aryan project of institutional reformation culminated in the events of the Axial Age, when philosophy was first born as a public-facing institution, an event that we have already covered in detail during the series. It was during the Axial Age that philosophy was first born out of the mystery schools. In this article, we are going to connect both philosophy and the mystery schools with this larger Reformation pattern associated with the Aria. As we'll be exploring in this article, philosophy is a product of this larger grand Aryan project of civilization redesign and reconstruction. Ultimately, the goal of this project is to establish on Earth a new Atlantis, a new global civilization that will resurrect in spirit and substance the golden age of lost Atlantis before its decline. The Aryans seek to construct a new age when man's earthly institutions will once again be connected with the invisible government above, and the mysteries will again reign supreme as the center of a great global empire. As we will see, philosophy is destined to play a key role in the realization of this plan. In sum, the Arya arose in response to Atlantis' fall into corruption. Its mission is to craft a new model of civilization that will overcome the karmic pattern of the previous age. In the next section, I want to go back and investigate in greater detail three main underlying themes in human development that coincide with Atlantis' collapse. So when we talk about the Atlanta archetype collapse, these three themes are prominently involved. By developing a more detailed understanding of these trends, we can better understand the motivations of the Aryan adepts as they attempted to redesign civilization for a new post-Atlantean age of world order. And that finishes part one. All right, so in this next section, we're going to be re-examining the fall of Atlantis and considering the archetypal themes associated with its collapse. And so these themes will be developed and played out over the course of the Age of the Aria. So these are things that are, the Age of the Aria is inherited from the consequence of the decline and fall of Atlantean civilization. And these have to do with the karmic factors that are going to be playing out in our age. But they're also not, they're not just karmic, they're also opportunities for development. So we need to develop these elements, these themes, to their conclusion. So archetypal themes behind Atlantis's fall, section two. As previously discussed, the fall of Atlantis indicates a major transition point within the unfolding pattern of a larger cosmic cycle of creation. In the long-term evolution of human life, Atlantis' demise represents the end of one cycle of human civilization and the beginning of another. More specifically, Atlantis marks the midway point in a larger cycle comprised of a sequence of seven successive ages. So there's seven subcycles, and each subcycle is an age, what we call an age. So Atlantis is one of these ages, one of these seven subcycles. As the midway point in this larger cycle of seven ages, Atlantis marks a transition point between the first and second halves of the grand cycle. So it's the midway point. It's the fourth age, which is 3.5. So midway through the fourth age, the 3.5 mark is when the archetypal fall of collapse happens. And then the Atlantean age would resurrect and then fall numerous times. And so what really what happened was this main fall established an archetype, and that was the fall of the midway point of the Atlantean age. And then for the remainder of the Atlantean age, moving into the age of the Aria, we have a gradual decline of Atlantis and a gradual rising of the Aria. So that's how this transition in ages took place. So in the long-term evolution of human life, Atlantis' demise represents the end of one cycle of human civilization and the beginning of another. More specifically, Atlantis marks the midway point in a larger cycle comprised of a sequence of seven successive ages. As the midway point in this larger cycle of seven ages, Atlantis marks the transition point between the first and second halves of the grand cycle. In philosophy, the first half of this grand cycle is dominated by an involutionary motion, where the divine consciousness of spirit moves into matter to occupy the body of material forms. Involution marks the initial phase of the great cycle, where material forms are fashioned and ensouled by the spiritual consciousness of the world. This form-building involutionary motion moves toward a nadir point, where the tendency to envelop spirit in layers of matter moves towards its most extreme point. After the great cycle's involutionary wave attains its culmination point, the cycle's second half begins, where an opposing evolutionary wave commences. Evolution is about the ascent of spirit back out of matter through the evolution and perfection of form. Through the mastery of form, spirit overcomes its entanglement with matter and attains reunion with its own cosmic source. Atlantis marked the transition point between these two great motions, involution and evolution. The archetypal fall of Atlantis represents the nadir point of matter's veiling of spirit, where the involutionary wave moves into its most extreme state before yielding to evolution. So evolution is the inverse of involution. Evolution is the spirit within matter moving back out. After the fall of Atlantis, mankind set out on a new cycle based around evolution. In the transition to this new cycle, every aspect of the human being would be altered and transformed. The ideal of the new Atlantis represents the reattainment of a golden age where the invisible government in heaven is once again rooted as the central institution of human society, the central axis around which a global civilization revolves. The Aryan ideal isn't to recreate what once existed in the past, but to evolve an already existing ideal forward into a progressed and evolved state of expression. The New Atlantis thus represents a state of progression in human civilization when man's earthly institutions will once again be united with their heavenly counterpart, the so-called invisible government, but this time in a new form. The next golden age must come in a new design, one suited to the new age we're living through and which can incorporate everything that's happened since antediluvian times. The transformations that begin to take place after the fall of Atlantis, as mankind commences its move into an evolutionary motion of growth, emphasize the need to confront and overcome the following three themes: materiality, individuality, and self-determination. Each of these themes is a key element from which the new global order must be built. The next golden age can come only when each of these three trends is factored into its main design. Let's take a closer look at each one by one. So these have to do with these are the design challenges that the Aria is attempting to overcome in their grand plan for a new Atlantis. So we're gonna be looking at three themes, and these are gonna be prominent as design elements in this age that we're both a product of and that we are continuously working to create and progress this grand project of civilization. So the first of these themes is materiality. The first of the major transitions mankind would experience after the deluge involved a mass psychological transition away from an internally oriented state of psychology and instead toward a state of consciousness that prioritized its focus on the external world of body and of the material environment. After Atlantis, mankind's psyche would undergo a drastic reformation, one in which mankind's primary focus of attention would move away from its initial orientation toward the mythic realms of its internal life, i.e. the archetypal realm of the collective unconscious, and instead shift toward an increasing focus on the demands and hazards involved with man's material and social life. Note, see my material on depth psychology, including my zine, for more on Jung's model of the human psyche. The course of events that have led mankind toward adopting a materialistic outlook on life was in large part driven by either the consequences of environmental instabilities, such as droughts and floods, or by the wreckage caused by empires and their conquests. So the instabilities are both environmental and social in origin. As time passed down from the time of the deluge, more and more swaths of the global population began to fall under the control of extractive empires. The rise and fall of these empires served to unite previously separated tribes and nations into common economic zones, while at the same time forcing large populations out of old traditional ways of living. And the old traditional ways are associated with the Atlantean archetype. The end result was that mass groups of people were transitioned rapidly into an entirely new paradigm of life, one that was more interconnected, yet also more unstable, driven as it was by a world order that was falling under the increasing dominion of empire, debt, conquest, slavery, and war. In short, the pagan era's long series of empires served to disrupt, disorient, and destabilize an old order of civilization and herald the coming of a new one. In short, the sequential development of the pagan era's long series of empires served to disrupt, disorient, and destabilize an old order of civilization and herald the coming of a new one. The rise and fall of empires during the pagan era of civilization set in motion a globalizing momentum that bound more and more regions of the world together under the auspices of economic empire. Over time, these vast economic empires fell out of the control of monarchy and instead fell into the rulership of oligarchy, where a financial elite oversaw the formation of a vast bullion-based trade network connecting large regions and population groups together under an increasingly standardized architecture of political, economic, and legal institutions. So the effect of war was to spread institutions. You know, conquest and empire during this age served to spread, you know, despite its destruction, the flip side of it was that it spread institutions, a common set of them. And they were in large part oriented around the transition of money from a credit instrument maintained by the temple to a bullion-based financial instrument that was under increasing control of this independent class of merchant bankers. So this international class of merchant bankers ends up becoming the catalyst for this development, this larger development of mankind moving from monarchy into oligarchy. It's a progression that happens there, and the catalyst of this progression was this group of international bankers and the form of empire that emerged in these agrarian states was one that promoted or sort of opened up a space for this group to emerge. And then once this group does emerge, they kind of become associated with a war-making machine, and then the various main pieces of that political or that war-making machine become the elements of the oligarchy. So again, the rise and fall of empires during the pagan era of civilization set in motion a globalizing momentum that bound more and more regions of the world together under the auspices of economic empire. Over time, these vast economic empires fell out of the control of monarchy and instead fell into the rulership of oligarchy, where a financial elite oversaw the formation of vast bullion-based Eurasian trade networks connecting large regions and population groups together under an increasingly standardized architecture of political, economic, and legal institutions. This mercantile class of oligarchs would become enriched under the rise of war-making empires. They would strategically use their wealth to consolidate control over society, gradually shifting power away from society's old power base, the priesthood and the monarchy, and instead into the war-making machine that they controlled. Later, during the fall of these oligarchical empires, which really is, Rome is a great example of this, but this is a larger process that happened throughout the Axial Age. The various zones they once held together as a united front for war, conquest, and pillage would turn against each other and balkanize. Essentially, they would fragment due to infighting and civil war. In time, these oligarchical empires would collapse just as their monarchical forebears had, from internal uprisings, civil wars, and barbarian invasions. The difference was, when these oligarchical empires collapsed, they left in their wake a different order of institutions than that which they had originally inherited. It was from the remains of the oligarchy's modified set of institutions that the original institutions of the Christian age would be built. The archetypal example of this historical motion comes with the Roman Empire, which was ruled by an oligarchy before fragmenting and falling into decay. When civilization would later be reborn from its ashes, it clothed itself in the new pattern of oligarchy-based institutions that Rome had created. So the fall of Rome ultimately had the effect of transitioning the world order away from monarchy and into oligarchy on a permanent basis. It solidified that transformation. Since the fall of Rome, the terrestrial government of the earth has been ruled by an evolving lineage of oligarchical powers. So this is even true during the Christian age. The Christian age is marked by a situation in which the power emerged as an alliance between various feudal, you know, kingdoms that formed out of the political institutions of the Roman Empire. And then the Christian religion really emerges out of these kind of hollowed out religious institutions that existed at the end of the Roman Empire. So the Christianity emerges as a modification of this sort of like shell of religious institutions, in which the mystery schools have been taken out of the equation and moved into philosophy. So essentially that's what happens. So during the Axial Age is when this transition happens and philosophy moves out of the body of religion and becomes this autonomous entity. And Rome is involved at sort of the center of this transition. In sum, one primary consequence of the constant churning of Eurasian and North African empires during the progression of the pagan age was that one of the consequences was that much of Eurasia was brought together via empire onto a common plane of institutional development and standardization. So again, this is what sets the stage for the new world order to emerge, that's grounded in oligarchy rather than monarchy, and that it becomes more increasingly involved with control. The power becomes associated with control of physical resources and human resources rather than sacred knowledge. So it's sort of like the old order becomes in a way secularized with the move into oligarchy. Throughout the course of the pagan age of civilization, human institutions were being standardized in civilization zones across the globe, so that peoples all over the world were elevated to a common plane of development. At the same time, society was also transitioning from a monarchical to an oligarchical form of governments, one that was empowered by an increased focus on economic and political concerns, and a decreased emphasis on spiritual and religious considerations within the overall cultural climate. This program of institutional globalization, i.e. the age of pagan empires, appears to have begun sometime around 3000 BC, a date that Manly P. Hall associates with the onset of the Kali Yuga. Now, the Kali Yuga is associated with the ancient Hindu philosophy and their approach to the calendar system, and it considers the idea that there are four ages of mankind and that mankind goes through, and that the Kali Yuga is the most materialistic of these ages. So it's associated with a wave, like an evolutionary wave, a form building wave, and really that's what happens, is that the form of human institutions and human psychology itself would be reborn and be modified during this age. So there's a purpose behind this this sort of descent into materiality. A type of death and rebirth ritual would be played out, or is being played out still. So yeah, this program of institutional globalization begins sometime around 3000 BC, i.e. the Age of Empire, and that's the Kali Yuga. In ancient Vedic philosophy, the Kali Yuga is associated with an age of materiality when mankind is driven to prioritize its attention on overcoming and transcending the harsh material realities of life. Since the onset of this great collective motion into materiality that would begin with the onset of the Kali Yuga, the empires of the pagan age would rise and advance through a series of successive stages until the process culminated with the Roman Empire, which dominated Europe before falling into ruin during the early centuries of the Christian age. One consequence of this program of institution building, of imperial institution building, was that it came at the expense of an older way of existence. This had the effect of gradually transforming society away from an old model and into something new. One of the characteristics of the transformation of civilization that was taking place was a shift away from the religious life and toward more secular concerns related to perpetuating one's physical survival in a world that was becoming increasingly unstable, as regions all over the world were constantly being thrown into chaos due to conquests from imperial states and invasions from barbarian hordes. The ongoing series of empires that dominated the pagan era caused mass migrations and displacements of peoples. These mass motions of imperial conquest would disrupt and transform the institutional order of global civilization. The cycles of creative destruction caused by the rise and fall of pagan empires serve to facilitate a gradual collective motion of civilization away from an Atlantean model and toward the direction of something new. The new age of civilization mankind was moving into is one whose primary focus of attention would be externalized toward the realities and necessities of physical existence. This was not how things were in Atlantis. The Atlantean was more introverted in their psychological orientation, and it is said that the third eye, i.e. the pineal gland, an organ of spiritual perception, was then opened. By implication, this organ now exists in a latent state and is unused by the average individual. On the flip side, the average human of today emphasizes their organs of sense perception to a much greater degree than the average Atlantean. So the orientation of consciousness has become externalized. One consequence of this collective shift into a material focus is that there emerged alongside it a political transition in the power base of Earth's terrestrial government. Power would move away from the priesthood and monarchy and transition instead into the hands of oligarchs, who emerged as titans in control of major industrial, financial, economic, and military operations. These giants of war making would in time rise to take control over the terrestrial governments of the world, consolidating their economic, political, and legal institutions, and reforming their culture and religion to fit its needs and agenda. Overall, the rise and fall of empires during the pre-Christian age had the effect of moving the collective body of mankind toward having an increased focus on the material world. This would have the political effect of empowering secular institutions such as finance, industry, and trade. And it is from these sectors of society that the oligarchy would emerge to take control. Whereas in the first ages of civilization, society was ruled by a sacerdotal elite who ruled through their monopoly of sacred knowledge over ritual magic and mental telepathy. This knowledge had now left the temple and hidden itself away so that the former political elite, meaning the priesthood, would become disenfranchised without its base of knowledge, which had moved out of the temple and moved into philosophy. So without this body of sacred knowledge, the priesthood was disenfranchised, and then a new political elite, which was the oligarchy, who were in control of these institutions of war making, they instead rose to take the reins. So these are all effects that have to do with this tendency in human civilization to move towards materiality. This not only a move in civilization, but a move in psychology that manifests through civilization, from an introversion to an extroversion, and from the pineal gland to the sensory organs. This brings us now to another psychological transformation that was taking place, and this is part two of the three trends that we're going to be looking at, and this has to do with individuality, i.e. the emergence of the ego principle within the psyche. So taking place alongside the psyche shift from an internal to external orientation is another slow building transformation, the gradual activation and development of the human psyche's ego principle. Within the human psyche, the ego principle is involved with the notion of individuality, where the person experiences themselves as a unique, autonomous, physically embodied life form that is willing and able to exert its personal preferences and willpower on the world. This principle was present but latent within the majority of Atlanteans. Manly Hall describes the psyche's ego principle as follows. Quote, in the inner construction of the human psychic nature, there is what we might term a drive to power. This psychic streak in man seemingly arises from ego. When a man desires, he says, I want. When he intends to advance some special course, he says, I will. When he wishes to become rebellious against the circumstances around him, he says, I will not. All of these pressures, I want, I must have, I must be, have to arise in the ego. In the earliest times, before the ego principle had come into development, man was tethered into a hive mind. This is what I call a hive mind. This hive mind was the state of affairs that characterized Atlantis and, to a lesser degree, its early post-Diluvian successor states. So one of the ways you can think about this is with research that goes back, research throughout the early part of the 20th century on the Aborigines of Australia and these sort of primitive tribes who retained a mode of psychology that was much more internally focused and cognizant of the collective domain of the unconscious or the mythic realm. And you could say the Native Americans were as well examples of peoples who were much more in tune with the mythic realm of the psyche, which is the collective unconscious and the archetypes that reside within. And so the, you know, the priesthood, the religion was based around these myths that were connected to these psychological powers within the individual mind and within the collective mind. And so the priests, you know, who had a monopoly over the sacred knowledge, you know, what they really possessed was like a type of control over the collective psychology of man through their mastery of these psychological powers that are described in these ancient mythologies. So this age of myth is also an age of these great giants of the of psychological mastery. And remember, so the word psyche, we're not just talking about the mind, but we're also talking about the soul. So these were evolved souls. And these more evolved souls who were more advanced in mind ruled over an empire in which they, you know, effectively controlled the hive mind of civilization. So what happens with the fall of Atlantis is that gradually the psyche is shifted into, on a personal and collective level, they're both reoriented towards a more individualistic orientation that builds and leverages this ego principle. So in the earliest civilizations of man, the psyche of the average individual was focused inwardly toward the source of itself, toward the gods, or more technically, the archetypes of the collective unconscious. This references the hidden metaphysical realm of human consciousness that the priesthood wielded advanced knowledge over through its monopolization of the esoteric teachings of its mystery schools. This prehistoric age of hive mind was also the age of myth, an age when the institutions of religion held complete dominion over the affairs of society. During this period, the average person experienced life in terms of its inner mythic realities. During such a psychologically introverted age, it is natural that a priesthood possessing knowledge of how to control and manipulate life's inner metaphysical domain should be empowered to rule. In these earliest ages of civilization, mankind lived under a paternalistic order in which the needs of the average individual were provided for by the authority of autocratic state rulers and religious leaders who wielded complete control over a secret science of nature's laws. During this paternalistic age, the elite priesthood of shaman magicians at the apex of Atlantean civilization ruled society from within the inner sanctums of the magnificent temple complexes scattered about the Atlantean landscape, where they governed the collective psychology of the masses while also controlling its core institutions. This was a time of the caste system when individuals were slotted into narrowly defined social roles defined by their caste position. During this age, the ego principle was latent within the average individual, whose consciousness was cloaked instead in a persona enforced upon it by the caste position that they had been born into. With the fall of the Atlantean world order, mankind begins to move out of this paternalistic age of governance and into a series of increasingly pluralistic forms of oligarchical rule. During this process, the ego principle of the average individual begins to be stimulated into activation. As the old institutions and caste structures derived from the Atlantean age increasingly break down, they become replaced with a new order of civilization that increasingly emphasizes individual development. In sum, the fallout from the rise and fall of the empires of the ancient world is largely to blame for catalyzing a collective psychological shift towards individualization. As a consequence of the tremendous pressure placed upon the individual that the forces of empire would repeatedly exert, there came a constant stimulation of the psyche's ego principle, which up to then had been latent, buried deep behind the caste system's fixed hierarchy of personas and social roles. As the age of empire progresses and man's material and social environments become more and more unstable, an increasing amount of pressure becomes placed on the person's ability to develop and utilize their own psychological resources, in order to best navigate the tumultuous transformations taking place within their external environment. As the collective psyche gradually moves into an increased level of concern with the material conditions of life, the old caste system with its well-defined social roles and persona identities breaks down. As a consequence, each individual is tasked more and more with carving out their own unique niche so as to ensure their own survival. Overall, evolution is developing the psyche's ego principle in order to gradually mold a human into a self-governing individual. It is one of the evolutionary themes of the current age that the ego be brought out of its prior state of latency within the psyche and into active development. Over time, this increase in self-awareness that was beginning to emerge in human psychology would lead to a drive for increased personal autonomy and political agency. This, in turn, would lead to demands for inclusion in governance by outsider castes and classes that were previously disenfranchised. Whereas before, power was vested almost exclusively within the priesthood and monarchy, in the post-Diluvian age, economic and cultural institutions began to take on more prestige and gain influence over the affairs of society. This evolutionary motion within the collective psyche coincides with a political transition where an oligarchical elite existing outside traditional boundaries of monarchical empire gradually takes over political control of society. In time, the rise of this new political elite, this oligarchy, would set society on a new path, one motivated more by individualistic and materialistic ambitions than on mythic and religious concerns as it had been during the days of the quote-unquote hive mind of Atlantis. So that ends the second section where we're talking about these themes. So that was the theme of individuality. And again, this it coincides with materiality. And then both of those coincide with this third theme, which is self-determination. As we just covered, the rise and development of the ego principle in the human psyche coincided with an increase in demand for political agency among classes and castes outside of the monarchy and priesthood. The human psyche's increased concern with expressing its own innate sense of individuality coincided with another emerging trend, the increasing desire for self-determination among the masses. Gradually, a growing demand to express personal agency and political influence emerged within various sectors of the population. This had the effect of pushing society toward adopting more pluralistic forms of state government, where power is more widely distributed among numerous constituencies within the population. The individual with personal preferences inevitably seeks to exert influence over the governance of his social environment. But as the saying goes, with power comes responsibility. As new groups emerge to take power, they also take on the responsibility of wielding that power. This collective motion toward the increased emphasis on individual self-determination is one in which the body of mankind takes on more and more responsibilities for fulfilling the duties of social governance. The immediate consequence of this emerging trend was for civilization's governance model to move from monarchy to oligarchy. In time, more democratic tendencies would develop as a larger and larger percentage of the population would demand participation in the governance of their affairs. As more of mankind takes on more of the responsibility for civilization's upkeep, an increasing percentage of human souls must elevate themselves to a position where they are capable of fulfilling these responsibilities. The challenges that come with taking on more responsibility stimulate the individual to develop their own internal resources and faculties in order to meet this challenge. In this way, the psyche's reorientation toward its physical and social environment provides a platform of new experiences that the soul will utilize in order to be stimulated into developing and unfolding its own inner potentials. This pluralistic motion in human governance toward democratization is part of the grand plan of the Arya. In large part, civilization's evolution in the direction of democracy is the work of the legacy institutions of this original Aryan sect. It was in their secluded Himalayan homeland that the vision for a worldwide democracy was first developed. This democracy was to be supported by a philosophic commonwealth of nations where philosophy would be esteemed as the dominant ideology of the masses. Now that we've tracked the three main trends in human evolutionary development that have come into emphasis alongside the decline of the Atlantean age and the rise of the Aryan one, let's move on to investigate the strategic game plan the Aryans have used in pursuing their quest of a new Atlantis. And that ends section 2. So section 3, the Aryan Reformation. To briefly recap the Aryan origin story. According to ancient myths and teachings, before the collapse of Atlantis, there was a movement to reform Atlantean society away from its corrupt ways. This movement was instigated by a reformist sect of the Atlantean priesthood who had stayed true to the highest ideals of the wisdom teachings and had prophesied that unless Atlantis changed its ways, it would succumb to disaster. After their attempts at reform proved futile, this group migrated out of Atlantis. They journeyed to the other side of the earth and settled in the secluded mountainous regions of the Himalaya, where they would develop their doctrines into a new paradigm for the future design of civilization. So that was a recap. The Aryans survived the deluge and in time spread out from their sheltered homeland to gradually transform the institutional architecture of human civilization, modifying the core psychological and sociological characteristics of the various tribes, colonies, and vassal states that remained isolated from one another over the post-diluvian landscape of the now destroyed Atlantean Empire. This project of institutional transformation was a gradual one. It took place in successive stages in such a way that the remnant civilizations of Atlantis were gradually weaned off the institutional paradigm of their predecessor and instead gradually converted toward adopting the Aryan sect's new incremental approach for civilization's redesign. The Arya-led transformation of peoples and cultures who were once formerly vassals of the Atlantean state would not take place all at once. Instead, it proceeded in a series of successive stages or waves. These waves emanated out from the secluded North Asian homeland of this reformist sect. From this source region, great spiritual educators and institutional reformers would emerge as branches extending outward from one common tree. In periodic emanating radiations, outbound Aryan migrants would pulse out from the Himalayas to travel the earth, reforming and evolving in gradual waves the various post-Atlantean civilizations they would encounter. In this way, the Himalayan region became the capital base out of which was managed a global project to reform and evolve mankind in a new direction away from the previous Atlantean paradigm. This global project of reforming civilization has quietly been pursued since the time of the deluge by a sect of spiritual masters residing in seclusion in remote regions of North Asia. In esoteric philosophy, these masters are termed the Aryan Adepts, and they are the earthly representatives of the invisible government. In esoteric philosophy, the great waves of evolutionary development that proceed out from the Himalaya to reform the peoples of the earth away from the Atlantean archetype is termed the Arya. So when we're talking about the cycle of the Arya, it's this wave of reform movements that modify Atlantean architecture of civilization and gradually modify it and transform it into something new. So it's not replacing it, it's modifying it in waves. And as it modifies it, the people who are living within the old Atlantean paradigm themselves are gradually evolved. So you can kind of see how a karmic picture is emerging in which the old Atlantean paradigm becomes the setting within which the old souls of Atlantis are now reincarnating in this new period. And then the Aryans are incrementally evolving this developmental unit of a civilization designed according to the old Atlantean institutional template, is modifying these institutions gradually, and in so doing is gradually modifying the environment in which these formerly Atlantean souls are evolving. So you see how we're talking about the management of institutions and the management of a vast system of reincarnation. The invisible government of the earth that we have been discussing as being the ultimate source and parent of the mystery schools is directly linked to this group of sages who are the North Asian-based founders of this Aryan cycle. In the Golden Age of Atlantis, the highest priests of the Atlantean mysteries formed this golden link between heaven and earth. But after the fall of Atlantis, this heavenly connection was moved to the Himalayas and entrusted to the master sages behind the Arya. The ultimate aim of the Arya is to lead human souls out of the Atlantean karma loop they had become collectively caught within. This is accomplished by stimulating these souls to develop the strength to overcome their Atlantean karma and progress to the next stage of their own evolutionary unfoldment. It is the aim of the great spiritual teachers who are the overseeing body of this initiative to reestablish on Earth a new golden age, a new Atlantis. This new Atlantis will feature the mysteries once again as its central institution, but with all of mankind now enrolled as candidates. Philosophy will be the core curriculum taught to disciples of this academy. The goal is to convert the entire mass of human souls into initiates so that through the body of a completely awakened mankind, the divine power behind the world can complete the great work it had originally set for itself before it first fashioned its creation. This vision of a new Atlantis exists as an archetypal ideal for us to strive toward and eventually achieve. It represents the culmination of the fifth age of mankind, the Aryan Age, which is driven by this Aryan-led cycle of institutional reformation. In order to achieve its utopian vision for civilization, the Aryans set about the task of gradually modifying the institutional metastructure of human civilization in such a way that the humans developing within these civilizations would be stimulated to learn the lessons they needed to learn owing to the karma they had attained from their involvement in the previous Atlantean age. At the same time, these evolving human souls would be stimulated to develop and release new physical and psychological capacities and potentials that had previously been underdeveloped and kept latent within them. Taken in sum, the New Atlantis symbolizes the fulfillment of the evolutionary ideal for our age, when we have finally overcome our Atlantean karma while also developing our God-given soul potentials. Only then can we say we have finally achieved the New Atlantis. And that's the end of Section 3. Section 4. The Aryan Agenda and the Quest for a New Atlantis. In his teachings, Manly Hall has described the reclusive fraternity of rishis and adepts who serve as the invisible government behind the Aryan campaign for world reformation as follows. Quote, the administration of the racial unfoldment is in the keeping of certain custodians termed adepts. They are beings belonging to the present life wave who have, by the extraordinary cultivation of their spiritual faculties and powers, become conscious instruments of the divine plan and the natural teachers of unenlightened humanity. These adepts are, quote, the hands and feet of the great Lord. They are required to guide the race without interfering with the right of the human being to learn through experience. They must keep the universal laws and are servants rather than masters of the great plan. These spiritual gurus are said to dwell in retirement and frequently select remote places for their habitations. They have their disciples whom they instruct and are masters of the esoteric arts and sciences associated with their religious philosophy. So that's how Manly Hall describes the spiritual hierarchy, i.e. the invisible government that is behind this Aryan wave. This invisible government behind the Aryan migrations has formed the central axis of world civilization for millennia, spreading its influence out in a series of successive waves as part of a long-term effort to gradually develop and evolve the civilization forward towards the ideals of its vision for a new Atlantis. The purpose of the Arya's evolutionary changes is to develop a model of civilization that will be responsive to the three great trends in human life that have emerged since the fall of Atlantis, which we've discussed: materiality, individuality, and self-determination. The Aryan sect's aim has always been to reestablish a golden age on Earth by bringing the collective body of mankind to a point where it can collectively resurrect the ideal of a golden age, one that will ultimately progress and evolve what was previously established during Atlantean times. The new Atlantis that these sages and rishis have been working to build is not a replica of the old model, but a forward progression and further enhancement of it, one that takes into account the various evolutionary progressions and changes that have taken place within mankind since antediluvian times. The Aryan agenda has been in motion since prehistoric times. The philosophical doctrines that justify and explain their agenda were not written down until right before the onset of the Kali Yuga, i.e. the Age of Materiality, which, according to Manly P. Hall, commenced around 3000 BC. The wisdom tradition taught by the lineage of adepts who descend down from the first Aryan rishis was not compiled and written down until approximately 3100 BC, according to Manly Hall, a time period that directly precedes the onset of the Kali Yuga. This body of compiled wisdom teachings would come to be known as the Vedas. The Vedas is the earliest recorded doctrine of spiritual teachings descending from the original rishis of the Arya, the reform movement from Atlantean civilization whose exile to the Himalayas set the stage for the next age of human evolution to commence. During the Aryan migrations, adepts and initiates would branch out from their North Asian homeland in order to embed themselves within strategically located communities and regions where they would initiate reforms to the institutional architecture of communities in those places. In time, the Aryan reformist doctrine would travel around the world in order to modify and redesign cultures and peoples across the globe, bringing them away from the old inherited traditions of Atlantis, and instead toward a model appropriate to the new age that mankind was collectively moving into. Through this gradual motion of institutional reformation, what was initially an Atlantean-inspired world order gradually came to become Aryanized, with its cultures transforming into a design that imitated not old Atlantis, but rather the institutional design of the Aryan community. The Aryans accomplished their reforms not by overthrowing the cultural systems of the peoples they encountered and their waves of migrations out of their Himalayan homeland, but by modifying them in increments. The Aryans took a gradual approach to stimulating human development by focusing their efforts on modifying and redesigning the overarching design of civilization's institutional architecture, i.e. social structures, in such a way that the populace living within these changing cultural systems will be strategically nudged to develop and evolve in a certain targeted direction. The qualities emphasized by the Aryans in their reformations of Atlantis's legacy institutions were ones that factored in the three great post-Diluvian changes that were taking place to mankind that we discussed, notably its move into materiality, its focus on individuality, and its increased demand for personal self-responsibility. These three trends describe attributes that philosophy is specially designed to work with and develop. As we will discover in the next section, philosophy is a creation of this grand Aryan Reformation project. It is specially designed to transmute these three motions of the soul into the production of an elevated and further evolved human species. So, last section, section 5, philosophy's emergence was a project of the Arya. One example of the impact that the Aryan migrations had on the transformation of civilization comes with aggression states. So it's like a case study. Prior to the rise of the Orphic sect in Greece, circa 1500 to 1200 BC, I think there is a more precise date, but I know it's somewhere in that range, Greek religion was in a primitive state and was trapped in an outmoded institutional pattern derived from Atlantean times. The Orphic sect moved into Greece as part of this greater pattern of Aryan migration and set about reforming the region's religious institutions, modifying them into the pattern of Olympian deities that we know today. Within the context of this newly redesigned mythology, the Orphics resurrected the Atlantean mystery school system, giving it an Aryan redesign and incorporating certain changes to its structure that would modify it from being an exact replica of that which had once existed during the Atlantean age. Centuries later, during the early period of the Axial Age, Pythagoras and Plato would become initiates of these Orphic mystery schools. In time, each would develop and teach original doctrines of philosophy that reinterpreted and reformatted the Aryan wisdom teachings contained within these Orphic mystery schools, giving them a new vehicle for the modern age. Pythagoras and Plato were ambassadors of this greater Aryan Reformation project, alongside other great world teachers of the Axial Age, such as Buddha and Lao Tzu, etc. Each participated in furthering the preparation of mankind toward the Aryan dream of one day fashioning a new Atlantis. The common destiny that the great philosophical leaders of world history have collectively labored toward is to inspire mankind to achieve for itself a state of highly evolved existence that will mirror the archetype first established for it by the spiritual founders of the Aryan sect. The story of modern history is a story of this ideal being gradually implemented across the face of the earth. Before this new Atlantis can be constructed, the archetypal evils of the old empire must be confronted and overcome. One of these archetypal elements of Atlantis's fall into corruption is the tendency of one sect, such as the priesthood, to hoard access and monopolize sacred knowledge for its own selfish use. The sacred knowledge of the wisdom teachings is meant to evolve humanity. It is comprised of the secrets of nature's use of energy to create form. Mankind is intended to use this knowledge to progress and evolve its own form so as to achieve ahead of schedule the next phase of its evolutionary development. Ultimately, it is man's destiny for these teachings to be revealed completely to the collective body of mankind. Without the dissemination of this knowledge, the collective transformation of mankind can never take place. to hoard access to this knowledge and block its natural and proper flow into the collective body of civilization is to retard nature's innate drive to evolve and improve mankind. One of the primary objectives of the Aryan reformist movement was to break the stranglehold that the priesthood had on the mystery teachings so that they could not so easily be blocked from being disseminated. One of the reforms offered by the Aryan sect was that it insisted on democratizing the wisdom teachings and present them in a form where more and more members of society could benefit from them. It's not that they gave these teachings out openly. Rather, they opened the teachings up to candidates from outside sectors of society who qualified to receive them. Corrupt elites who wanted to keep this knowledge exclusively for themselves sought to monopolize these teachings and hoard access to it. This goes against the larger laws and plans of the divine being behind nature and always ends up failing as a strategy. Indeed, the entire Atlantean archetype of the fall, which we've discussed previously, is the process of collapse setting in due to the priesthood polarizing itself away from the invisible government in order to pursue autonomous domination of the earth. So by this, what we mean that the earth is rightly under the dominion of the invisible government, but when a sect of a small elite attempts to take control over the terrestrial government of the earth over that of the invisible government, that is this archetype of the fall associated with Atlantis. The idea of an elite attempting to monopolize knowledge to control the earth, to control the world. The plan to monopolize control of knowledge so as to selfishly rule the earth is one that always ends in self-destruction. The historical record of the repeated collapse of the post-Diluvian pagan empires, which emulated Atlantis's core institutional model, is a testament to this truth. The collective growth of the species is stunted when access to its heritage of wisdom teachings is arbitrarily cut off by politically motivated groups. It was the goal of the Arya to gradually evolve mankind to a point where it could break this pattern for good and move mankind toward a new institutional paradigm, one that would direct mankind's collective development in a new direction. This new direction is aimed at setting mankind on a new path of self-discovery, one that will ultimately lead to the establishment of the Aryan ideal of the New Atlantis. In conclusion, the purpose of the Aryan redesign of civilization is to evolve the collective body of mankind forward. One of the main Aryan initiatives is to create a global civilization where the mysteries are once again enthroned as the central institution of a global civilization, as they once had been in Atlantis. But unlike in Atlantis, the entire body of mankind is now to be enrolled in this mystery school, not just a small elite who would be trained to govern over a comparatively primitive mankind in a paternalistic fashion. The Arya works toward the progression of human evolution at all scales, to bring mankind from a previous state toward a more advanced one. And the new paradigm that it is pushing man into, the entire body of mankind is to be elevated and raised to the state of the initiate. Through an elevated humanity, God takes control of its specially designed instrument, mankind, which it uses to accomplish its great work of divine resurrection. This is the great alchemical work in nature, the great resurrection of divinity in all realms of nature, in the world itself. As mankind is stimulated to evolve more and more, God awakens more and more within its creation. It takes more and more complete control over its instrument and is able to more perfectly and completely accomplish its sacred works. Philosophy emerges as the custom design instrument that the collective body of mankind is intended to utilize in its effort to raise itself up to reestablish a golden age of a new Atlantis. The goal of redesigning the architecture of civilization into the archetype of the new Atlantis has been the project of the Aryan hierarchy since their first emergence back in antediluvian times. The heavenly pole of this new Atlantis archetype already exists. It is the invisible government, the spiritual hierarchy of awakened souls who exist outside of the polarity of birth and death. The task of the Aryans has been to remake civilization into a suitable vehicle for reconnecting terrestrial civilization with this heavenly archetype. This ideal civilization must be global in scope, cooperative in spirit, and dedicated to the highest ideals of Aryan philosophy. Once the New Atlantis is finally established as a philosophical empire comprised of a commonwealth of world nations, the fifth age of mankind will be fulfilled, and the sixth age will then commence. So that's the end of the article. And again, it's titled The Migrations of the Arya and the Quest for a New Atlantis. After the fall of Atlantis, a new global power arises in North Asia. And then we're going to be picking up this thread again in the next next article, which is also kind of a next chapter in this series. And that's going to be on Plato's vision for a worldwide democracy. And it's based heavily on an article of Manly Hall's by the same title. So please check back for that. Check out the article. Hope you enjoy the podcast. There is a video version available on my YouTube as well. See my website, alexsacken.com, for a link to that. And anyway, thanks for tuning in. God bless.